Hello and welcome back to another episode, specifically season two of Only a Bag. I am your host, Nathaniel Mellor, and with me as always
is your other host, Darcy Melton.
Thank you all so much for listening. This is basically, I think, the start of what we're going to call season two. Mm-hmm. And we realize we have not put out an episode in a while. I think we kept meaning to.
We've been busy.
We've been so busy.
But we have not forgotten about you, dear listeners.
We have not. We did actually revamp the website quite a bit. It's a little bit under construction here and there, but we are not nearly as talented with WordPress as we were hoping we would be, and it didn't ever get any better. So
no, we did not improve our WordPress skills.
Yeah, which you can if you're talented and you're dedicated, and if you know what you're doing. So we have a different website now on Wix. So
this is not a plug for Wix or WordPress.
They're great. No, this is just us letting you know that we have a fancy new website. So we'd love for you to check it out. Mm-hmm. But we've been working on that, as well as some other bits and bobs, and we've been wanting to come back and, keep recording podcasts because we have lists on our phone and a notebook full of ideas. And so thanks for being back to the first
episode of season two.
They say that season two is always better than season one. And no, they don't. It's never true, I don't think.
Well, it will be with us.
Okay, we're going to trend set. So what we wanted to talk about, I guess to give an overarching view, if that makes sense, of this whole season, is we wanted to talk basically a little bit more about some of the cities. Like we've done a lot of talk on Rome. We talked about some house sitting. I think the first season was us trying to find what we're comfortable talking about. And we did some traveling at the end of last year. We went to Florence and Siena and somewhere else.
Rio Maggiore, which is part of
Cinque Terre. Yeah. Okay. We did just some traveling around our respective families that came and wanted to see what we do and where we live.
Took them to places we'd never been before.
Well, we tried it. We were like, no, we live in the South. And like, yeah, that's I don't want to go there. Where else have you been? I'm like, that was about it. But it did give us some direction though, because, well, one, we'd love to kind of talk about some places we've been in the North. And we thought it might be interesting to kind of delve into the South a little bit more while it's not as heavily visited, I think. Mm-hmm. And you might not be visiting, dear listener. It is, I think, worth talking about. It's a huge part of Italy, obviously. It's like the entire southern half. But I think more importantly, how many times we've picked up like a Lonely Planet guidebook or like a Rick Steves or something like that, and just to kind of see what they have for some of the southern areas, and it's just nothing. It's just,
yeah, it's very slim.
Yeah,
not a lot of information.
And even some of the restaurants, it's like ones that like aren't bad, but we they're not ones that you'd try necessarily
if
you
live in
there.
The guidebooks.
Yeah,
that's what you're saying. Yeah.
And I think anybody can feel like that. I mean, if Darcy and I come from a fairly touristy city in the south of America, south of the United States, called Savannah. And no, I mean, there's a lot of in the guidebooks, there's a lot of places where, I guess you could eat there. That's an option.
But aren't necessarily places I would go just as a Savannian, as a local. It's the same way where we are, where we live in the South, is that the places that are listed are fine. They're places you can definitely eat, unless it's an old edition and they're closed now. But there are so many places that aren't listed and that we think are really important for people to try, because some of them are really amazing. And you would never know.
Yeah, exactly. And I think there are a lot of differences between the North and the South. And through Darcy's, your new job, mm-hmm. we've met a lot of people who are new to Italy.
Yeah, haven't been here before. Even if they're well-traveled, don't know the nuances of this country, I guess, which is something that I hadn't really thought about necessarily until our families came to visit last year. And now meeting a lot of new people, I'm realizing that there's overlap in what people don't know and are searching for.
I think that's exact, especially with especially when our family came to visit last year, because I think it's basically you and I got used to being here, mm-hmm. and used to traveling around. So it's like what we weren't used to, or what we were maybe surprised by or expecting was very, it was like all of a sudden I was like, oh, we're far, I don't know if advanced is the right word, but it's like, I don't know, it wasn't novel for us anymore. Or it was, or even some simple things like expecting every train to be on time, because for literally 2 years they were. And then all of a sudden,
we expected every train to be on time. Yes, exactly.
So then when we were trying to like cajole our respective families when they came to visit to like get to the train station on time, only for it to be like delayed by 5 or 10 minutes, and to be like, oh, well, that's, you know, like, that's something that's new to me. And for them, they were like, yeah, it's Italy. Of course they're late. And I'm like, no, for like the 3 years of COVID, every train was on time because it just was less traffic and less hangups and less whatever it was. So I think, no, I think basically all that's to say is we wanted to start off the season two with a north versus south, like just a sort of, not even comparisons, I don't think that's fair, but more like expectations.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it.
Like, so some things that you can expect in the north and some things you can expect in the south, simply just for, so you come prepared, basically.
Yeah, and so you're not disappointed.
Yeah, no, I think that that's important as well. And I think that maybe the first place to start is with, not history, but like...
Well, I just want to say that, again, this is based on like what every person has said to me who's visited and hadn't been to Italy before. I would say that when you visualize Italy in your mind, if you've never been here, you are probably visualizing Tuscany. You know, rolling hills, cypress trees, beautiful, lovely. All of Italy is beautiful and lovely, but the geography, topography?
Yeah, or topography, yeah, I think.
It's just not always Tuscany. So you're probably thinking of Tuscany. And when you think about what you're going to be eating in Italy, you're probably thinking of pasta and pizza, which is the south. And pizza specifically is from Naples. So it doesn't necessarily, like the Italy you've been fed on in movies, I guess, is not the Italy that you might arrive to, because pasta and, like, you know, typical Italian seeming pasta and pizza don't exist in their ideal way with the landscape, is Tuscany. Does that make sense?
I think that makes perfect sense, because I think it's essentially like what your visual idea of Italy is the north, and your taste idea, you know, your flavor idea of Italy is the south, which is obviously not to say there's no pasta in the north. There are pasta dishes, and there are like pastas local to certain cities and regions for sure. But it's still, I think, a predominantly southern, like it's one of those classic things, like the north has risotto, the south has pasta. I think sort of the same thing with like butter versus oil. Like in the north, they are a lot more willing to use butter, and in the south, they're not. So they use olive oil or lard for a lot of things. And we'll talk about a bit about that later, I guess, as we get forward.
But you wanted to talk about history to start.
Think it was just to something that I realize we learned from being here is that, I guess as Americans, we're often told that like America is a very young country. 1776, that kind of thing. We got the Declaration of Independence. We got the Constitution. We got the whole
kit and caboodle.
I mean, there was some time between the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, to be clear. But that's not what we're going to be talking about today, because neither of us know that much about American history, despite spending 15 years in the American school education system. Mm-hmm. So that doesn't look good. But we are going to talk about a little bit, very briefly, so briefly, is Italian history, because it is about 100 years younger than America, in the sense that the country of Italy is 1861, is when it was unified. Before then, it was a bunch of kingdoms. And that does create some still visible differences in cuisine, in language, in customs, in culture, in people, in everything. And it's, while it's not like the end of the, if you're coming for a vacation, it's not the end of the world to be like, oh yeah, it's Italy. They're all one big country. There is still some pretty big differences, I think. And a lot of it's just interesting. I think more than anything else, it's just sort of like, you know, like notes of interest, that maybe won't affect your trip. But one of the simple ones, mm-hmm. And that, as we've talked about with some people, because we live in the South, and some of these people we've met coming from your job, They, you know, wanted to learn Italian before they came, just have some words and...
Which is great. I highly recommend it. It was very, very nice of them to do that.
Yeah. And it, I mean, it's just, yeah, if you're coming, it's not bad. Like, people will speak English, but I think we reiterate every time, but it's like, while people will speak English, it's not bad knowing just a couple words.
And it's so appreciated, I think, by Italians when you do try.
Yeah. But it's also the Italian language comes, like, basically... an easy way of putting it is sort of when the Roman Empire fell. We're not going back that far, but like essentially Latin was the language of the Roman Empire. And then there were these sort of these dialects of Latin that were spoken in a bunch of different places. And you know, the South and the North and all these different regions had their own dialects that were by and large sort of descended from Latin and with other languages thrown in over the years. But the Italian, for instance, comes from the Florentinian dialect from Florence. And it was basically, at the time, people were learning the Florentinian dialect because you had authors like Dante writing in the Florentinian mm-hmm. dialect. And people were like, I want to be well-read. I want to be, you know, smart. So I want to read Dante and I want to read it in the original language. And this is a fair, I'm just to be clear, this is like I'm boiling down just years of history into this, yeah. you know. Very simplified approach. But it's all to say that, like, in the South, specifically, like, most of the South was under the Kingdom of Naples, and they had Napolitano as a language. And still today, Naples, a lot of people predominantly speak Napolitano.
In Naples, yeah. In Naples. When you're in Naples, you will hear a lot of Napolitano, not Italian.
Yeah, I mean, there are movies and TV shows in Napolitano. And then in those regions around Naples, in Campania, the region of Campania especially, it's a lot of these towns have dialects that are...
derived from Napolitano, which is largely derived from Latin.
Yeah, and it's like considered a vulgar Latin rather than a pure Latin, I guess. But it's all to say, it's not like... Some people will say that like, oh... like some people who speak Napolitano will be able to understand dialects in the regions around Naples... maybe they won't be able to speak it, but they'll be able to understand it somewhat. And then some people even say, like, you know, if they're from the north, they might come down to Naples and say, like, oh, I can kind of understand Napolitano. But then other people are like, you know, they could never understand it kind of thing. So it seems...
They are two different languages.
Yeah. So, and I think Napolitano has a lot of, because they've been just in war for the last couple hundred to a thousand years. So they have a lot of Spanish in their language. They have a lot of French. Mm-hmm. They have some Arabic. So there is a lot of other influence in the language that isn't just Latin, basically. So it's not like two different Latin derivatives. It's basically one that had a lot of influence from other cultures.
And on top of that, like you said, every little place that has the Napolitano language has trickled down into the little towns, each town will have new and or different words in their dialect because of whoever came through their town. Yeah. You know, so a lot of people cannot speak the same dialect as a town over necessarily. And a lot of people in the town where we live speak dialect and not Italian. So some of the people that I'm meeting with my job have done the hard work of learning Italian, but can't necessarily communicate with every person because a lot of the people in our town speak dialect and not Italian.
And I think interestingly too, there's a lot of people who, again, very brief history lesson. A lot of when you hear about like Italian immigrants in America, like in history, a lot of them came from the South. It was basically a big farming time, a big farming culture. And when basically things were drying up, things were you couldn't farm. Whether it was I have no idea why. I didn't know. I mean, I really should have done more research on this. But a lot of basically people were like, we're not making money doing this. We need to get out. They went to either South America or North America, specifically New York. But there's also a lot of Italians in like Argentina and Brazil.
Venezuela.
Venezuela is huge. So there's a lot of like influence. And one thing that's fascinating is this sort of, there's a couple of small towns near us that we have either lived in or been to and know people in. And there'll be Americans that come back every summer just to visit. And they speak, you know, fluent English because they're American. But they also speak their local town's dialect in Italy. And some of them even grew up thinking they were speaking Italian because they're like, oh, my parents are Italian or my grandparents are Italian and we would speak this in the house. And it wasn't until they got to Italy when they realized that, oh, nobody knows what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Everyone's looking at me like I'm crazy. Like, what's going on? And then they realize, like, oh, it's not the same, which is why people still, like, even in their 60s and 70s, don't necessarily know Italian, despite the fact that, again, I want to say the unification happened in 1860. It's been a slow movement into, you know, sort of having, like, I don't know, the idea of unification has not caught on as quickly as one would think. Yeah, I mean, I think
my understanding is that obviously they teach Italian in schools, but a lot of little kids, you know, are taught their first language at home, obviously, as we all are, for the most part. And if you are grandparents and your parents and everyone has been taught that language in their home when they're little, just the dialect has just trickled down, and that's become what you speak in the home in a lot of cases, instead of your whole family transitioning into Italian.
Yeah. So that's just, I think we wanted to, part of the reason of mentioning that is just, if you happen to be learning some Italian and you're wanting to, like, practice it out, you're going to have a great time in the North. And I will say, by the way, this does, in the North as well, there are a lot of small towns and regions that do have their own dialects, that do have their own languages, for lack of a better word. And it might be the same there. We don't have that much experience in the North, so I wouldn't, you know, I couldn't, could not say.
Yeah.
However, it is something just to kind of know that while it is one country and Italian is the national language, it's not, if you go off the beaten path, basically, especially, it's not uncommon to not hear Italian. Mm-hmm. I think it's...
And that's not to dissuade you from trying to learn Italian. I mean, we only both speak... We're not fluent in Italian either, but we only speak Italian. Neither of us speak any sort of dialect, and we get around just fine. I mean, in Naples, a lot of people, you know, that you'll meet in shops or whatever, professionals, they speak Italian, although they might, you know, be speaking Napolitano to each other. If you talk in Italian to them, they will understand it. Oftentimes, these days, too, if you speak in English, they'll understand it well enough. So we don't want to dissuade you from, you know, trying to learn a new language. You'll be fine. Just be aware that if you hear some weird words that you've never heard before, it might not be you having not learned enough Italian. It might just be a different language.
That just sounds vaguely Italian. Yeah, exactly.
So I want to talk about getting back to the idea of when you think about what you're going to be eating when you're here, you're probably thinking of pizza and pasta. But so last year, when our families visited, I was kind of surprised by the food that we were seeing and eating in the North. And I happened to be talking to a friend who, coincidentally had also been visiting, Tuscany about the same time of year. And she was also very surprised by some of the things she saw on the menu. And that is to say that I was expecting quite a lot of pasta, vegetable dishes, a lot of what I see on menus in the South, which is, you have a pasta, you have some, possibly you can order a meat on the side, you can order a vegetable. It's pretty simple and straightforward.
Yeah.
But a lot of what we saw in Tuscany was...
I mean, a lot of it was meat dishes. There's some soups with, like, bread in there. For lack of a better word, a lot of, like, peasant food, dishes.
It is in the South, too. Like, pasta and vegetables also peasant food, but this was more of a... It was very rustic.
It was very rustic. I think your friend also didn't like it very much.
She did not.
Okay. Which is not to dissuade you, dear listeners, from trying it. No, I think it's also like there was like a... Yeah, it's rustic. It's like other things with beans, there's meats, there's stews, there's soups. There are some pasta dishes, but it's like, I think there's like two in most restaurants we went to that weren't, I want to be clear, we did not go to a lot of like touristy restaurants. So, which is not against touristy restaurants. It's just a touristy restaurant might have like, you know, five pizzas on the menu and like five pastas on the menu and then some of the normal meat dishes they might serve. But we would try to kind of find those like off the beaten path restaurants, which, you know, sometimes don't really exist in small touristy towns. And we were surprised though really to find like, you know, oh, there's like two or three pasta dishes. And on that note, one thing that's in the South is really common is if they have pasta on the menu, they can almost always make like aglio olio, which is just garlic and oil. Mm-hmm. Sometimes a little parsley in there or something like that. And in the North, they have aglione, I think is what it is, aglione, which is basically garlic oil, red pepper flakes, and parsley. Mm-hmm. So it's pretty much the same thing. But I was surprised because we went to, I think, like two restaurants that had one pasta dish on the menu, or at least two pasta dishes. And I asked, you know, we're both vegetarian, so I asked if they could make it just, you know, the garlic and oil, and they, neither of them could do it. They're like, no, we, you know, unfortunately we can't do that. We don't have the like ingredients to do that.
Or they just made a big pot of pasta for the night. Yeah.
And I think, so that is some kind of an interesting difference, which is not like, I think it's not a bad difference. It's just one of those ones that's like, oh, it's a, rather than a bunch of separate ingredients, it's the pasta dish is like, I don't know how to explain it, because in the South, it's almost like the pasta is an ingredient or a base, and they have things they can add to it. Mm-hmm. And it felt like in the North, it was just like lasagna or something like that. You're not going to take the lasagna sheets and do something else with them. It's just, it's mm-hmm. just used for lasagna. So it's mm-hmm. like the peachy, which is like kind of a very thick spaghetti. It's a type of noodle mm-hmm. that we found in like, well, Siena, really. So I'm assuming it's from Siena, or at least around there. But it's a very, very thick spaghetti. But it was interesting because they could have that on the menu with like a sauce, and usually with like boar or something. Mm-hmm. But then it would like, that would be the dish, like the one pasta dish. So it kind of felt like the pasta isn't like the base for a couple different varieties of sauces. The pasta is just the carbohydrate within this dish.
Yeah. I would say, and this is really all of our experience. This is, I wouldn't say that this is a hard and fast rule
for thing. Sure.
But my impression was that a lot of the traditional Tuscan food, and maybe northern food, but we were mostly in Tuscany, is hearty and gamey,
mm-hmm.
and often based on like flavors mingling.
Yeah.
Which really, I'm going to say that's from my experience. I don't know if you feel the same way, Nathaniel, but
it's not separate food.
Yeah. And talking about the pasta all being made like in one pot, this is the boar pasta for the night. To me, that was all the flavors mingling rather than, I mean, anytime you cook, the flavors mingle. But I guess in the South, people often talk about tasting every single ingredient.
Yeah.
So well,
especially like if you order, just to interrupt, it's like, mm-hmm. You mentioned earlier, but it's like it, in the South, and if you haven't been yet, or if you're going to go, and we'll talk about this more, I think, in some of the Southern episodes, but it's basically, mm-hmm. There is the primi, secundi, the contorni, and the primi is a pasta dish, the secundi is a meat dish, and the contorni are vegetables on the side. But it's like, when you order like a meat dish, for instance, like steak, mm-hmm. what you get is literally a piece of steak and nothing else. There's
just a piece of steak on the
plate. And it's like, it's not like marinated, it's just meat grilled or in a pan and then on your plate. Mm-hmm. And the same thing with the contorni, whether it's like the broccoli, which is like the broccoli rabe, mm-hmm. or whether it's like the zucchini sott'olio or something like, it's just one thing. It's not like, oh, a bunch of sides together. And I think it's quite, I don't know. I mean, it's a very, like you said, it's like you're supposed to taste each individual thing. Mm-hmm. They're not really big on combining.
And in the South, where we are in the South, food is made quite simply. So if you're talking about broccoli, it's probably broccoli, maybe a little bit of garlic, and maybe some olive oil or the little, you know, a little bit of spicy pepper.
Or some like lemon, sometimes like a squeeze of lemon juice.
But it's just not a lot of stuff. It's just quite simple. And the idea is that you taste every ingredient.
No, I think that's exactly it. And so that's like, and we'll get into that, I think, maybe more, because I think it'd be interesting to talk a little bit more about as we get into the South, because it is, I mean, I don't know, I think it's, I don't know, maybe it's only less interesting to you and me. But no, I think it's fascinating because we've talked about it with people before. It's just sort of the difference in food and the difference in culture around food.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think
that's not to say that, basically, I want to say that Italians are obsessed with food. And I think that goes across the whole country. You know, mm-hmm. that is not a North versus South. They just love food and talking about food. That's been our experience.
And also, like, and actually on a similar note, I will throw out there because you might hear, we often hear like, oh, this dish or this so-and-so is from this town. You know, it's from right here. It's, we made it. And it's like, but then you go one town over and it's the exact same dish. But like, instead of oregano, they put parsley. Or mm-hmm. instead of, they use breadcrumbs, but instead of like breadcrumbs from, you know, whole wheat bread, they use breadcrumbs from white bread or something. Mm-hmm.
And there's that that little cookie, the biscotti. Would you call it a biscotti or
I think it's a bread pun.
It is like a little bread roll thingy that Nathaniel really likes. And they have variations of them in the Tuscany
Umbria region. Yeah.
But we went to this little forno panificio in Siena called Forno Sclavi. There are actually a lot of Sclavi bakeries, but we'll put in the we put in the description.
Yeah.
This one. It's really good. And so Nathaniel bought one of these little bread rolls, and we were asking, you know, what's it called? What's it made with? All these things. And she's like, well, it's called, you know, pan col santi. And it's made with, like, what is it? Nuts, dried fruit.
And this one was like salt and pepper as well, which is interesting. Yeah. But the one in Perugia was like all candied fruit peels with raisins and like anise seed. And she was saying that like some of them also have like pancetta and stuff, even with the fruit. So it seems like it's a bread with like just...
stuff in it.
Yeah,
just but she everything. Was explaining, she's like, well, you know, this is our recipe, but in the, you know, the town over, they have this kind, and in Perugia they have this kind. But you know, obviously she's like, ours is the best, you know. But I love that everybody has a different recipe for their local food, and there's always the best,
and everybody's is also like 100 something years old, the recipe. Yeah. It's like, all right, well, that's
someone's grandma made it once.
Yeah, and then yeah, exactly. All the kids 200 years ago took the recipes and tried to improve them. No, so we got onto this. I apologize. I am like trying to find my way back. No, I think we wanted to also talk about a little bit about like the kind of the, I know we talked about expectations, but there are some differences in food, as we've just talked about with the pan col santi, but like, a very obvious one you mentioned earlier is pizza. Mm-hmm. Like pizza is from Naples.
Yeah. The best pizza is Napolitano pizza.
I will fight anybody who says otherwise. Yeah. I mean, not really, but just... If you have Napolitano pizza and then you have pizza from like somewhere that's not Naples, and not in Napolitano style, then it's like, oh,
yeah, that's the thing. You can have Napolitano style pizza in other places. I mean, there's some great pizza in the valley where we live, and it's Napolitano style. There's Roman style pizza, which I will clarify. I think we talked about this in one of the Rome episodes. But there's pizza a taglio, which is, you know, kind of it's almost like a focaccia style. Yeah. It's kind of a fluffy crust often, and it's cut by the little rectangle, essentially. It's baked in large pans. But then there's like the Roman style personal size pizza, which is similar to Napolitano pizza, but it's like crunchy.
Yeah.
Would you say? And I love Rome. I do not love that pizza.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
We've had it like a couple of times. And it's also, it could just been like literally we struck out like three times. And that could be a thing. It could be something where it's like, wow, that was, you went to the three worst places for pizza. Which is very totally possible. Mm-hmm. But people will tell us here, they're like, oh, you gotta try Roman pizza. And I'm like, well, I wasn't thrilled. And pinsa, P-I-N-S-A, is not a pizza, but it's actually quite yummy. It's mm-hmm. like a little, basically a flatbread of stuff on top of it. And they're actually quite yummy because it's, I mean, no, but it's like, it's not pizza. So you're not like thinking, oh, I'm gonna sit down for pizza. It's like, oh, I'm gonna sit down for this yummy flatbread. And I think that's a very, just a brief thing. It's just like basically in Naples, there's so many differences, but essentially it's a much hotter oven and cooked for a much shorter time versus the north, where it's a much slower cook time and a much cooler oven. And unfortunately, I would say American pizza is a northern Italian pizza. We do that sort of like, it's not hard, but like a lot of pizzas you get in the States, I feel like it's firm on the bottom. It's mm-hmm. like that's mm-hmm. bread with some stuff on top. And in Naples, it's this thinnest layer of dough.
Yeah, it's basically a little sloop in the middle. You can't really pick up a slice.
And that's supposed to be a big thing of it. Yeah, when you pick it up, it's not, there's supposed to be no real body to it.
Yeah.
It sounds terrible, honestly. It's one of those things that's like...
It sounds gross when we're explaining it, but it's amazing.
It's something that if you have the option to try, the opportunity to try it, I definitely highly recommend it. It's also one of those things that, too, it's like, there's a couple places, like there's a Sorbillo and a Da Michele in Naples. And those are probably the two most famous pizzerias like in Italy, honestly, arguably. Mm-hmm. And they always have lines at the door and they're just slammed all the time. Weirdly, Sorbillo started taking reservations, I think, though, because we've...
It's a secret, but we're telling you.
Oh, it's a secret. Oh, I should have.
No, we're telling you guys. It's been a secret.
Because they never used to do it. It's like you used to basically show up at 7:30 when they open to get your name on the list and then call your
stand
name.
Stand in a mob in the road, dodging mopeds.
Yeah. I mean, it's a tiny little road, so it was like wall to wall, but you're just always standing waiting for your name to get called. And it usually took about like 2 or 3 hours. Like we'd get there at 7:30, your name get called at like 9:30, 10:30, sometimes even 11.
We waited for 3 hours in line for pizza there. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely.
But now they take reservations. So if you just go in the afternoon and try your best at Italian because they'll appreciate it. You might get a reservation on the little book.
Yeah, and I think one time they didn't actually, they took our reservation, but then we came back and like, we don't have it. But instead what happened, we just got bumped to the front of the line, which,
well, ooh, they had two imagine books. Made people angry. Somebody was new that day and there were two reservation books, okay. And it got complicated.
So all that is to say, the pizza is a huge difference.
Yes, and I would say, I mean, to be super honest, we're doing our best to give you all of our gathered knowledge from mm-hmm. everywhere that we've been, but we want to be super upfront and say we don't have that much knowledge about, you know, every city in the north.
100%.
And certainly not as much knowledge as we have about Rome, or have, you know, from living in the south. But I do encourage you, if you are a foodie, if you care about the food that you're going to be eating, I guess I wouldn't say I'm a foodie, but I do care about the food I eat. I'm not really a go with the flow food person. I really want the best. Oh, I'm kind of persnickety. Yeah. Anyways, I encourage you to look up some articles, basically.
Yeah.
On what is the local food item to have wherever you're going to be. Because, you know, cacio e pepe is really big here in Rome. And I guess you might find that in Naples, but I kind of doubt it. So, but it's amazing. It's lovely. It's lovely, cheesy, peppery pasta. It's delicious.
Yeah.
So every place that you're going to go probably has like a delicacy, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, I think that's a perfect thing. It's like, if you have already a list of cities in mind and places you're going to go, it's worth looking up what those things are and go. I mean, like Florence has the Florentinian steak, which, as we found out, they are, we don't eat meat, but her mother came to visit and she does not like rare meat. And mm-hmm. as we
which
found
a lot
out,
of people don't.
Which a lot of people don't. And you cannot order a Florentinian steak unless you order it rare. They are very serious about that.
Mm-hmm.
They will not serve it to you.
We'll go all into the Florentinian steak in our Florence episode. I find it fascinating, even though I don't eat meat. I just,
yeah,
food culture.
Well, I think that's the big thing. It's just, it's going to vary widely depending on where you are. So it's just sort of be, I don't know, I think it's just be, if you're cool with being open-minded and excited about whatever, you know, and also, I mean, like, I urge everybody to, like, if there is a line, especially if it's a place that, you know, you've heard really good things about, if we've told you about it. no, but I mean, like, to do your best to kind of suss it out. Because sometimes we've seen lines for places and we're like, you know, we've eaten there. It's okay. It's not worth waiting 30 minutes in line. And I'll talk about this more, like, especially in the Florence episode. There's, like, some famous, like, sandwich shops and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, gosh, yes.
Yeah.
It's madness.
So.
And I think it's important. You know, I just said that I'm persnickety about what I eat, and I guess I am. But I also have to be clear with myself about my energy levels, and especially when we're doing the whole going to museums, running around all day, not necessarily taking a rest. I have to be super clear with myself and honest with Nathaniel and whoever we're traveling with about what I need. You know, am I hot? Am I thirsty? Am I hungry? Can I wait 30 minutes in a line? Probably not. You know, I need to go somewhere else or have a snack while we're waiting. So I just encourage you to do that.
If you're traveling with kids, though, not that you're a kid, but it's just like, you know, when you have kids, it's like you can't, I mean, it is, we have seen the arguments in lines with parents trying to tell their kids, no, it's really good. And the kids are like, I'm going to die in like 12 minutes.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't care how good it is. So there is that kind of argument to be said. So yeah, it's definitely knowing your own limits and knowing that like, it's going to be fine. I mean, whatever food you find is going to be good, I think. I mean,
yeah.
There is bad food. I'll be clear. There is some very bad food out there. But
if you're at the point where you just need to eat something, yeah. Eat something. You know.
And I think like, well, and yeah, exactly. And I think the last thing we want to talk about is coffee.
Yes. So espresso, obviously, is the thing. We have a whole episode on coffee?
I think it's more about coffee culture in Rome is what we've talked
okay.
about.
Okay. Maybe we'll go into coffee more because...
this is coming from two people who know nothing about coffee, be very clear.
Well, okay. So I'll go over it now because this is, again, something that people have who I'm meeting through my job are... It just don't know. So there's espresso. We have talked about this, but I'll go over it quickly. Espresso, very tiny, short little coffee. It's not like American coffee. A macchiato is espresso with a little bit of foamed milk or just hot milk in it. Cappuccino is the same shot of espresso with a lot of foamy, lovely milk. Those are the three.
Well, I guess the latte would be the one with a lot. The cappuccino is just a little bit more than the macchiato.
Yes.
Which is
a lot of
I will say also if I'm yeah latte of milk I don't think you and I have really seen the sort of the American latte that often in Italy
like, no we really haven't
they're not that big on I mean, maybe it's a South versus North thing, I'll be honest. And that's something I really wanted to mention is, or we really wanted to mention is, a lot of coffee culture, and this is a broad generalization, but a lot of coffee culture was refined in the North, like Torino especially, or Turin, if you want to say it in its other name. But like Lavazza, the coffee brand, comes from Turin. I want to say, I could be wrong, I'm fairly certain the modern espresso machines come from Turin, or at least espresso machine. Yeah, it's one of the first pressure-powered one comes from Turin. And so there's a lot of, like, it has a very long history with coffee. Other brand, like Illy, Illy, comes from Trieste, which is near, like, Venice, if you don't know where Trieste is. There's a few other brands that are, like, very northern, like, rich history coffee. And even like Turin, they have like a lot of very specific coffee drinks. It's almost, I would almost say it's like Austria in their sort of, again, we have not been to Austria, but Austria has a storied history of coffee and coffee houses. Mm-hmm. And I think Turin is probably the same.
Mm-hmm. Meaning like they have more items on their menu than the three or four that we just listed. They have a lot of different specific coffee drinks.
And some with chocolate and some with this and some with that. I mean, like, even the South is the most interesting one. Again, is the Café Corretto, which is the corrected coffee. And it just means they just put a splash of alcohol in it.
Mm-hmm. Or the affogato. A little bit of gelato and some espresso. Yeah. That's also lovely.
I bet you that's a northern thing, though.
Quite possibly.
Basically, that was to say, though, is as Darcy finds the train.
The thread, yeah.
The thread. No, is one thing that we have not been that north. So our experience of northern coffee is Tuscany. Mm-hmm. And our experience of southern coffee is basically like all of Campania and Calabria. And gotta be honest, it's I love the espresso in the south. It's like, I mean, it's
delicious.
Very little coffee. I two thimble, three thimblefuls of coffee, maybe, genuinely. Like in
well,
a
you can do it in a sip. I think my espressos I do in three or four sips.
No, but I mean, but like the actual quantity is only a couple thimblefuls of coffee. Yeah. But in the north, it's just like
it's longer.
Yeah, it's longer. They almost fill up the.
And what that means is that it's a lot more water. It's not that you're getting multiple shots of espresso. They've just put more water through the grind.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of gets, it's a little less strong. It's a little bit, obviously, it's a little bit more, and it's hard to,
the flavor's not as nice. It's diluted.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And it's hard to say that, like, when you're if you're coming from America, an American coffee, sort of like the you know, the 8 ounce, 10 ounce, 12 ounce sort of cup of coffee, it's hard to kind of, because it's going to taste strong, obviously. But I think it's one of those things when you, if you were to land in Naples and get a coffee and then land in like Florence and get a coffee, you might have a very different experience. And it's even for that reason, like Kimbo, K-I-M-B-O, is a Napolitano, brand from Naples. Mm-hmm. And one of the ways we've talked about this before, but like coffee brands will often sponsor bars. And something that we look for sometimes when we're traveling is a bar sponsored by Kimbo, especially if it's in like an airport or something like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's like the Rome airport. Like, we go for the one that's sponsored by Kimbo rather than a northern brand, because I'm like, I want them to pull a really small, really strong, really short coffee.
Yeah, that tastes really good.
Exactly. Yeah. And I don't want the long, watery coffee. But again, I think that's a lot of the, I mean, I want to, as Darcy mentioned a lot in the beginning, these are all personal tastes, but they're differences for sure. You might prefer the longer coffee. And I think along, because those are the three big ones, right, we're going to talk about?
Yeah.
Essentially. Oh, I think the last thing is, I did very briefly mention at the beginning, is oil versus butter. Mm-hmm. And that is something that is a sort of a generalization, but it's a pretty trustworthy generalization.
Yeah.
Like, even something as simple as the carbonara, which is a pasta with the egg yolk, mm-hmm. and the and pancetta. Like, in the north, some people put a little bit of heavy cream in there. In the south, you'll never see that, because people in the south have no idea what to do with dairy products.
Yeah.
I love the South. I'm just saying, butter, heavy cream, it's like, it's shoved in the furthest corners of the grocery store. It's like, nobody knows how to use these things.
It's just dairy. It's just gelato. And it's really, milk,
yeah.
And coffee.
Gelato, to be fair, is phenomenal. No, but I think it's interesting because it's like a lot of the pastries use oil or lard, which we found out years after being here and eating a fair amount of pastries and then realizing like, oh.
As vegetarians, we've been eating lard by accident, yeah.
Which explains why some of them were delicious. no, actually, some of them do have a bit of a bacony taste. Like, you're like, oh, there's Was this cooked on the same?
Some pork in this?
Yeah, so nice. I mean, it's not, because it's like it comes out at the bottom and it like cooks in with.
Well, you're talking specifically about the
sfogliatella.
Yeah, that's made with lard. A lot of the cakes and the little, what would you call them?
The little, even the baba kind of things, like the little fluffy things.
Yeah, a lot of that is made with olive oil, and it's not like you don't taste olive oil, but you might taste a lack of butter if you're used to very buttery pastries.
And I think one thing that you're going to see a lot of, almost certainly, is what's called a cornetto. And it looks a lot like a croissant, a croissant.
And it is not a croissant.
It is not a croissant. and it's something we've talked a lot about, people, because we kind of like, no, that's a cornetto. I'm like, well, it looks like a croissant. I'm like, they look identical. They are not the same thing. It is a huge letdown, I'll be honest with you. If you're expecting...
This is the thing, yeah. Manage your expectations, because croissants are one of life's sweet pleasures, according to me. But, I was expecting a croissant when I had a cornetto, and it was a big letdown because I was not expecting a very sweet, orangey sort of pastry.
Because it's basically heavy on the oil, and they almost always use that fake orange flower flavoring.
Mm-hmm. And some of them use the real orange flower flavoring. I'm not a big fan of the orange flower flavoring in bread, and I was expecting butter.
Yeah, plus it's like they do that, like the sugar syrup on top almost always. Mm-hmm. Or just like powdered sugar or something. And
they are nice. I mean, I don't think I've ever heard anybody else complain about them the way you and I do, as much as we love this country.
Well, it's also, we had really good ones, I think that's the thing.
Yeah.
And then sometimes, I think it's like that sort of classic thing, like there are bad croissants, but they're still good.
Yeah, it's still a croissant.
And it's like, wow, that still tastes like butter. And then you have a bad cornetto and you're like, this isn't good. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is not good.
I think we should talk about, unless you have more information on that, I want to talk about how we were also surprised.
I could sit here for 20 more minutes and just bash cornetto.
Okay. I want to talk about how we were also surprised by the flavor of Chianti.
That was another thing we want to talk about, was wine, because that is a... I think it's safe to say that a lot of wines that you hear about from Italy in America are northern wines.
Mm-hmm.
The Montepulciano, the Chianti.
Mm-hmm. You're naming the grapes, but like brands of wine.
A lot of the grape. Yes.
Grape variety, which is Chianti. So if you find Chianti on the shelf, you're not mentioning, Bob's Chianti.
Yeah, Two-Buck Chuck Chianti. No, I'm sorry. I'm mentioning specifically the grapes, because I think I think there's a lot of reasons for that. But part of it is the South simply does not care about a lot of things. Like, I mean, I would argue that the South is just less concerned with who else knows about their...
Yes, I think the South is much more concerned about eating well personally. I guess historically. I mean, we know a lot of places who are trying to branch out because they know that they have good product. So, but I think historically, Southern Italians just want to eat well and are less concerned about marketing themselves and putting out their product to the rest of the world, where Northern Italians, this is not like criticism or anything. They just happen to maybe be better at marketing or more passionate about getting their food out to the rest of the world. I'm not really sure.
I think on that note, it's simply the fact that, like, I mean, a lot of Northern Italian cities, I guess, have been famous for a lot longer than some Southern Italian cities. If that makes sense. Like Siena and Venice and Florence.
They're just more traveled.
Yeah, I mean, for 500 years they've been tourist sites. It's like, or maybe 300 years they've been tourist sites. So it's a little bit like a lot of the South that's still kind of, learning how to market itself as a tourism industry. Even as we talk about this all the time with people we know in the South, because it's very, we're in a small town, so it's very farming heavy. And a lot of people don't use pesticides, mainly because they can't afford them.
Mm-hmm.
So they're technically organic products,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the olive oil or whether it's their food or whatever, whatever they're growing. But they can't afford it's the test that basically the government can give you a little stamp that says this is organic, but they can't also afford that. So it's sort of like,
It just is organic by default.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They don't have anything,
fancy that says that.
Explaining that.
Unless they're going to try to, and then sometimes when they do show, like, okay, I've heard like, I can get this into stores in the North, but they're going to pay a lot more for something that says organic on it. Like, I mean, it's a difference of 3 or 4 euros a liter. When you talk like olive oil, like it's maybe like 8 euros a liter for not organic, and then 12 for organic, and it's like,
but
that's
the same product.
But it's the exact same product. Mm-hmm. And I think that is a big that is a pretty big difference. The wine especially, though, a lot of the wine is really well known, I think. A lot of northern wines are well known.
Yeah, and what was it that you told me earlier?
There's some expression about, like, like if you're talking about wine, it's like you want red wine from the south and white wine from the north or something. Mm-hmm. Just as far as, like, flavor. And one thing, I mean, we've noticed is we like all wine, but we...
As a disclaimer, we don't know very much about wine.
Oh, I don't know if you can tell. We're just saying wine a bunch. We don't have...
We know what we like, but yeah. I mean, we have no formal knowledge.
And we also, I mean, I want to be very clear, I don't think we've spent more than $6 on a bottle of wine in last 5 years.
Have I ever spent more than that on a bottle? Oh, God, yeah.
Like the States we do, because we're splurging. We spend like 12 on a bottle of wine.
Oh, gosh, that's true. Okay.
No, but here in Italy, I don't think we've spent more than 5 or 6 on a bottle of wine, because it's just simply...
So this is not top shelf stuff. This is like the regular person's... wine.
With every the Tavernello. And if you've been to Italy, you get the joke. If you haven't been to Italy, it's not good. Wine.
I like it. No, okay. It's marketed as
table wine.
But also there's like a kind of, everybody knows that it's sort of low-key called like the alcoholic's wine.
Yeah.
That is not me disparaging of any person or the brand or of people who like to drink alcohol. It's just like a Napolitano thing. Like in music videos, everybody will be drinking their own
Tavernello
and box wine of Tavernello. I'm also that person.
But it's also, I think that's like a thing of like, people, because we'll mention we like Tavernello and people laugh, and it's just sort of this like, not stigmatism, stigma?
Stigma, yeah.
Okay, so there's astigmatism and stigma, I always get the two words confused. but there's a kind of a little bit of a stigma around it, simply. And I think, Tavernello is great because they do it in boxes, and a lot of it's for the CO2 footprint, and I think in some ways they've leaned into it because now they sell these small little personal size
like
ones.
Little juice box. You know,
juice box of, I mean, so they seem they're in on it. But no, we do, I think while we drink cheap wine, I will say, for you listener as well, that doesn't mean it's going to be bad. There's often a lot of really good quality wine that is less than $5 a bottle. And
that same wine, if this is how you qualify it in your own mind, the same wine that we spend €3 here for, when it reaches the States, it would be
Be 11 to 15 to 20.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking. So, I mean, that's not an indication necessarily of how nice the wine is.
Yeah, I think that's the thing. I mean, it's also, we'll talk about it maybe more in a different episode, but if you are just looking for wines and you're not sure, a grocery store is a good place to start, just because every grocery store sells wine. And they all have these little tax stamps on them that basically, it usually denotes they are alcohol, right? I mean, it's like almost every bottle of wine I've seen has a tax stamp on it. Mm-hmm. But some are DOC and some are DOCG. And essentially one is it means it's from a controlled area, and one is a controlled area and guaranteed quality. The DOCG is for guaranteed quality. And essentially that just means it's a grape grown in the region where it's historically from, and done in a way that is supposed to be like appropriate for the grape. I guess it's like...
Yeah, it's like an indication of that quality, that grape quality and it being protected.
Exactly.
And monitored, you know.
And so if you want to basically, and I only say this because if you're like, I really want to try a Montepulciano from Montepulciano, which is a grape from the town / region of Montepulciano, not region in the general, like, you know, Umbria. It's Montepulciano is a town in Umbria, but there's a surrounding area of Montepulciano. Mm-hmm. And you look for the DOCG, which just means it's the grape grown in that region. But like even like San Gimignano, which is a tiny, tiny town near Siena, has their own white wine. I think it's like Vernacchio or something. Vernacchio.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Maybe it's Vernacchio. I can't remember. But essentially, they have like all these towns have their own grapes, and almost all of them have their own varietal of grape that is specific to the, if not that town, at least that area. And this does a little bit kind of go back to the we were talking about with food earlier. But like, there's so many people in the tiny town we live in that's like, oh, this grape, this is a grape from this town. But then everyone's like, no, it's a grape from the region. It's like it's been known. It's called, you know, everybody has their own word for it, but it's not your grape. It's just... Mm-hmm.
But it is the grape. It is the local grape.
Yes.
Which is different than being in the South and drinking a northern wine or drinking like a French or German wine, which we do as well. But I'm just saying, you know, if you want to make the most of your Italian experience and you really want to try something local,
yeah, yeah,
you can totally do that by going to the grocery store and just looking at the back of the bottle. It'll say where it's from, 100%. And looking at the tag, it says DOC or DOCG. The other thing is that obviously you can go to wine shops. Mm-hmm. And I mean, we don't frequent that many because often they look quite intimidating. but we do have a couple favorites, but I guess the point of this is that if you go there, often you can taste the wine, and the people who work there will know reasonably what they're talking about, yeah, and can recommend what's local, you know? And I think that's the best way that we've done it.
Then markets, like open, yeah, air / closed air, like not, I wouldn't say farmers markets, but like markets that sell like vegetables and meats and, mm-hmm, you know, they have butchers and things like that. Like they're quite common in Italy. We've talked about it before in the Rome episode. There's the Mercato di Trionfale. There's the Mercato Esquilino. Mm-hmm. Testaccio has one as well. And they have these wine vendors there. And a lot of them aren't, to be clear, a lot of them are not local. They're just cheap and good and giant vats.
Meaning not all the wines are local, yes, but sorry, the, yeah, the local little cellar will be local, yeah.
But sometimes there'll be one or two local wines just from, mm-hmm, that, like from a local. And they'll be sometimes a little bit more expensive just because it's not from a giant vineyard. It might be from a smaller vineyard, mm-hmm, so it's a little bit more expensive.
But at least the people working there can tell you, you know, what is local, yeah, and you can try it usually. Absolutely. Which is great.
I think we'll get into, I think, more of the stuff kind of, I think, as we go on, because I mean, we have like recommendations for so many places. I've realized, like, especially when it comes to like wine and food and pastries and things like that, especially we're big on those. I will say, like, it's,
we eat our way through traveling.
We do. And I think though, and we noticed this though, when your mom, I think, specifically came to visit, is we have so many more recommendations for places to get like snacks or drinks than we do for actual food, because we rarely eat out. Mainly because of the cost. It's just, mm-hmm, 60 euros usually for two, maybe 50, 40 euros for two people. But it's still a heavy price. And almost everywhere we've lived in Italy, we have, even if it's only for a week, like when we went traveling with your mom, we had a kitchen everywhere we went. Mm-hmm. And if we were staying there for more than a night, we were using the kitchen because
we traveled around with our bottle of olive oil that,
yeah,
we bought.
Yeah, exactly. And our dish, and our, what is it, our laundry soap? We traveled, yeah, around with the laundry soap. No, so I think that's a, like we, I realized like too, we might, I think in one of our earlier episodes, we said we're not going to give too many like recommendations on where to eat because it's so subjective. Yeah. And especially with places like Rome, like I got to be honest, like I keep seeing these articles, like best places to eat in Rome. And I'm like, the best places to eat in Rome are probably the Michelin starred restaurants. If we're being honest, or they have Gambero Rosso here, which is like the red shrimp. Mm-hmm. And I think that's their, one of the like denotations of like quality. There's now this whole, like, because there's slow food movement, there's, which is pretty powerful here as well. There's like, they have their own denominations as far as like where to find that. So it's hard to, I think, give a recommendation on where to eat when it's like, kind of like New York City. It's like the best places to eat in New York City are wildly expensive and probably worth the money. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you're left for the best budget eats, or best, like, you know, something hyper specific like Osteria or something like that. Simply because it's just super subjective. And I think in a later episode we wanted to talk about like how to find a good restaurant, like, again,
yeah, we're
sort
gonna
of
be
like
talking about
one.
How to find a good restaurant or, you know, pastry shop or gelateria. That's all very similar rules. But also, if we do give any recommendations, which we will, I would like to, mm-hmm, you know, for like wine shops or little places to get sandwiches or,
yeah, or snacks,
you know,
or pastries,
snacks, or, you know, we'll give recommendations on what we find affordable, you know, because that's where we've been, and places to get, you know, like regular goods. I don't think we have any recommendations on fancy restaurants because we don't go to fancy restaurants, and Michelin and lots of other people have already done all that.
Well, also, I think even the nice restaurants we went out to is with maybe four or five other with combined, like when both my family and your family came, it was like they were good, but it was like, okay, sometimes it missed the mark a little bit, I think, or it was like it could have been slightly better, or we've had better food, not to be like in the South, but it's like there are specific restaurants, I think, in where around where we live that we've had better food simply because
we like to find homey local places.
That's a good point.
As well.
That's a very good point. Yeah. So a lot of our thing is like if it's too flashy, if it's too like, we're not a big fan of those like tiny portions that you're like, ooh, what's coming next? Because this is not going to fill me up.
I mean, I love like a vegetable foam or like,
yeah, sure,
dirt flavored like liquid. I don't know. Like in theory, that all sounds amazing, and I will watch a TV special on all of that food.
Yeah,
but it's not what we purchase.
Exactly. I think I love watching the Netflix. What is it? The is it Chef's
Table?
Chef's Table. But I'm not.
Again, this is not a plug for Chef's Table.
But if it is a plug for that movie, Chef, is it? Not Chef. What is it? No, the other one. With
The Menu?
The Menu. Oh, my gosh. Totally a plug for The Menu. I don't want to get sued or anything. That's a great movie.
Shamelessly plugging The Menu. Anyways, yes.
Back on track. But no, I think to wrap it up, the one thing we didn't talk about, and maybe there's something else, but the biggest thing we didn't talk about is what separates the North and the South. And we're going to put this right at the middle of the beginning, and we completely forgot. So we're going to stick it at the end because it's a nice way to everything round it off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's, I know we joke about, there's like, there's two definitions. And there's one definition is basically the North is anything north of Rome and the South is anything south of Rome, with Rome kind of being right in the middle. Because there's a lot of flavors of both, whether it's kind of politically, whether it's customs, whether it's cultural, whether it's, you know, I mean, anything. It's, you know, it's kind of like this perfect medium middle ground.
Mm-hmm. But food largely, too.
Food largely as well, yeah.
It's geographical, yeah.
But then, of course, there's the bit of the joke is if you're in a city north of Rome, any city, you are now in the North, and anything above you is the North, and anything below you is the South. So it's like, if
and that changes from every city that you go to. Every city.
Like, yeah. You'll be in Florence, and they'll be like, the North is above us, the South is below us. But then you go up to, like, I don't even know, like, something...
Milan?
I'm not even thinking, like, Genoa.
Oh, yeah.
And even Genoa will be like, no, Tuscany is all in the South. Like, that's... We don't touch those Southerners. We're in the North. And, I mean, it's a bit of a joke, but it's, like, literally the farther you go to the North, into the North, rather... Is just
it the gets, more of the country becomes the South.
Yeah, the more of the country becomes the South. And I think something we will probably not talk about until we have more experience is the islands off of Italy, because, again, going back to the whole unification thing, they're so separate. I mean, just culturally, linguistically,
mm-hmm.
everythingly. And mainly being Sardinia and Sicily, because there's some islands off of, like, Naples. There's, like, Ischia and Capri.
Yeah.
But those pretty much are...
I mean, they're quite similar to Naples.
Yeah. I mean, they're beautiful, but they're also, it's like, okay, they're culturally not
wildly that different, yeah. As far as we know.
So I think that's a good, like, way to think about it is if basically a lot of people go and they see, we've talked about these people years ago. I mean, I remember talking to people who were like, oh, I saw so much of Italy, but it's like they never went south of Rome.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, honestly, an entire half of a country that people haven't seen, which I guess makes sense. I mean, when you go to the States, you know, if you're visiting America, you go to, like, I mean, everybody here we talk to, like, I went to New York, I went to Florida, and I went to, like, you know, San Francisco or something. And I'm like, oh, so there's the rest of the country you didn't see.
Or, you know, I've talked to a lot of people who do the giant, like, 2-week long or 3-week month long trip in America, and they go to, like, I don't know, like, San Francisco and what's in Las Vegas. And,
oh, yeah, for sure. They do, like, a little road trip across America.
Yeah, like Texas and, you know, yeah. Florida and then up the east, you know, but that's...
You're still missing half the country.
Yeah, though, still not going to see the whole country. And it's just, you know, I guess as, like, Westerners or maybe as Americans, a lot of us have been fed the idea of what Italy is. And largely that's the North. And that's okay. It's lovely. But if you have the opportunity, I do think you should, you know, you should try out the South. It's very different. But we're going to be talking about those differences in all of our future episodes, going into... each place that we know a little bit about.
Yeah, and I think we're going to start with the north. We're going to start with basically Florence and Siena and a little bit into Cinque Terre, which is near Genoa. And it's a sort of the nice, wealthy version of Amalfi Coast. That's kind of how it's branded. It's pricey.
Yeah, but the Amalfi Coast is also pricey.
That's fair. Well, Positano is pricey. I think some of the other places are less pricey.
Okay.
So we're going to talk about that, and then we're going to kind of move into some of the other regions we're a lot more familiar with, because I think it's are we realizing there's so much to see even in the region we're in, which is Campania, which is the same region as Naples, but so many people come down for simply the Amalfi Coast, which is also in Campania, and Pompeii, and then they leave. And so we figured, like, you know, for people who are, like, just trying to figure out, like, you know, essentially instead of spending a day in Pisa, which is, as we'll get into, is probably not worth it. Most people literally get off the train, look at the Leaning Tower, hop back on the train, mm-hmm. and keep going north. So it's like, you know, instead of spending a day in Pisa, it's like you could totally spend a day or two in the South, or a different trip in the South and have a really good time. But I think that's everything we want to talk about this episode, you know?
I think that's it. All right. And we hope to and we hope to talk to you on the next few episodes.
At least just talk at you if you're not going to respond.
We hope to talk to each other and for you to listen.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, you guys are just sitting there listening. So yeah, check out our website. It's all revamped and renewed.
Check out our website. Nathaniel has really been doing so much work on it.
Thank you. I hope it looks good. If you have any input, everybody who's listening, please let us know because, I don't know. I mean, like,
But also, I will say, if you have any specific questions, if you're going on an Italy trip, maybe I'm overcommitting here, but if you have any specific questions that we have not yet answered, feel free to shoot us a message.
Yeah, I think there's a contact form on the website. If not, I will definitely put one there. I did not put one on the last website, which is hilarious. I kept saying, like, contact us, and I'm like, wait, how do I contact these? Like, I couldn't figure it out myself, so I was like, oh, wow. So yeah, I think I'll stick a contact form on the website to keep this in. But until then, thank you so much for listening to episode 1 of season 2.
Yes, thank you so much. And we'll see you next time.
Goodbye and good night. Am I going to get sued for that?